What's up, Internet, and welcome to episode 90 of Radio Radar. I'm Hollander Cooper, and here with me is...
Ryan Telbert.
No.
I was just going to say, the best part about Tom not being here is we don't have to fight for who goes second, but now it looks like there's a new competitor.
I'm just kidding, Henry.
Well, it's because I jumped the gun. You know, like, and I'm also here with... And I was like, yeah, me!
Anyway, yeah, long week.
Yep, long week. Ready for the 3-day weekend.
Yeah, we had a bunch of reviews go up. Mm-hmm. You were slammed this week with just a bunch of weird reviews.
And you still got up a feature, too.
Yep.
But yeah, it was a tough week to not have Tom around, to be down a man, to be down a Tom.
Down a Tom.
Down a Tom, yeah.
One Tom down.
Yep.
Yeah. But we're getting ready. We're ready for E3.
We're down an intern too, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Donnie
the intern, who made his podcast debut last week with an interview that we made fun of before it went live.
And we immediately got rid of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That interview just proved that he wasn't Games Radar material.
He's just not.
No. Get out of here.
Yeah, but we got to...
He wasn't worth the money we didn't pay him.
We got a new intern starting soon and a new employee starting
new
soon.
New employee starts 2 weeks from now?
Yeah, sounds about right. Right before 1 week.
E3. 1 week.
A week from... Well, she won't be on next... She won't be here next week.
No, yeah,
she'll be here
1 week
soon.
From Monday.
Right.
Wow.
She'll
really?
probably make her podcast debut in episode 92 then.
It's the start of June very soon.
Yes. Yeah. And E3 is right around the corner.
Very excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't wait.
We'll probably do a pre-E3 stuff. We're still trying to figure out our E3 plans for the podcast. Last year we did a podcast every day of E3. I don't think we're doing that this year.
I don't know.
It was fun, though.
It was fun.
Well, could we bring the equipment with? I guess Thomas could just bring
the equipment. Yeah, we're probably going to bring the equipment. I was thinking, let us know in the comments what kind of E3 podcast. I know you're just going to say all of them, but realistically.
Podcast 3 hours a day.
Yeah, I was thinking we could probably get away with doing a podcast like Tuesday night and then one on Friday.
I think we could do Monday and Tuesday and then Friday. Well, if we did Monday.
But at that point, we might as well just do Wednesday.
Well, no. Okay, look. Monday. All the press conferences. Tuesday.
Not Nintendo.
But all the press conferences but Nintendo. Tuesday, Nintendo and first show floor experiences. Then Wednesday, Thursday, we can just roll those up into a wrap-up podcast on Friday.
Or we can do one on Monday, one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday, one on Friday.
Have fun.
Let us know in the comments what you want us to do.
Maybe the people here should do a podcast on Wednesday and Thursday.
No, that's not happening.
Run the podcast.
That's not happening.
And we'll just...
When you can have the two interns on.
We have standards on this podcast.
No, it's just...
And you exceed them too much.
Yeah, it would be Lucas, and two interns.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony.
Anthony would be here.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
It'd be a lot of giggling and silence.
Yeah.
I would listen to it over and over again. But yeah, let us know in the comments what kind of podcast experience you want for your ears during E3. But we should probably jump into the top seven, written by former OXM writer Dave Rudden.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the top seven awesome unlockables that were way too hidden.
Yeah, he did a really good job with this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a sequel to his previous... feature on like super secrets in games people didn't know were there. What was the?
What was it? Let me look.
It's on the first slide.
Vamp for a second.
It's on the first slide of this one. But this one is the opposite of that. These were awesome things that were hurt by being hidden. They should have been revealed from the start and just been part of the game. And hiding them just like damaged what could have been cool.
See, amazing unlockables that are nearly impossible to unlock was the prequel to this. I'm waiting for the sequel. Amazing unlockables that sucked.
Yeah, well, I think, Henry, as you mentioned, the issue here is that if you're going to have a really, really cool mission or feature or something in your game, like don't make it just a hidden thing that a fraction of the players will ever find.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like in it wasn't on the list, but like in Smash Brothers Brawl, it wasn't too extreme. But to get a lot of the characters, it was just play a lot of matches and then they'll show up.
And then you had to do the Subspace Emissary to get...
That was the worst.
I loved Subspace Emissary.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I hope they don't have those kind of trials in the 3DS one.
I would... See, there's... I would think that they would because that's just how they've done it in the past. But Mario Kart 8 has, like, Mario Kart, previous Mario Kart games have always had really weird hoops you had to jump through to unlock all the characters, like beat a time trial with this person. And this one's like, eh, just play it a bunch. And it feels like Nintendo has moved away from, like, the, oh, you got to play. I think for Super Smash Bros. Melee, there was one character that was just like, log 40 hours in the game. Jeez. So everybody just left their GameCube on overnight to get it.
And I also hope that if you have everyone locked in the 3DS version, you can just unlock everybody on Wii U.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
We can only hope. So let's jump into the top 7 awesome unlockables that were way too hidden, starting with
number 7.
Number 7 is Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes makes you hunt for patches to get to the best mission. And no, Patches is not the name of Snake's dog.
Nah.
Yeah, these are the Zoth patches hidden all around the game.
XOF.
XOF. Fox reversed. What's he saying with that symbolism?
What does it mean?
So the game is really...
It's like my organization's turned on its head.
Oh, man. Oh, can I say first, I don't like Kiefer Sutherland as Snake. I just started playing, and Snake
must
was talking...
finished pretty fast.
Yeah. And Snake was talking, and I'm like, who's talking right now? I don't even know who it is.
Just give it some time. Maybe he'll grow on you.
Well, but I mean, it is just Keef, though. I mean, it's just the Keef talking it up.
It is the Keef.
It doesn't sound like a character. It just sounds like Keef doing his thing. And Kiefer Sutherland is a good, I think he's a good voice actor and a good actor. I like him. But it's also just, you know, he's famous as a secret agent already, and then having him play another secret agent.
Yeah.
And this also, like, David Hayter wasn't great or even good sometimes. But
a majority of the time, he was downright bad.
Yeah. I mean, really, that just kind of came down
role.
To, yeah, it's just like, this is the voice you've always heard, so it's the voice you expect.
Kiefer makes me miss the grovelly part of Snake's voice, like the, Middle Gear.
But I guess if he's doing the face acting, too, then that's... good, like maybe he's a better face actor than David Hayter.
Yeah,
So the game is very short. The main mission, you pay $30, you get you play a main mission that will maybe take you 90 minutes. But to stretch it out, they hid a bunch of stuff. Like there's a ton of hidden items in it, and there's the Zoth patches are the main one, which are like tiny, basically invisible things in
the stage. Well, it's just go into the open world. Mm-hmm. It's raining. There's mud everywhere. I've thrown scraps of fabric around. Go collect them for me.
Well, and one is insanely cheap that I didn't know about until I read our guide. It was like, one is stuck to you. One, like, falls past Snake in the opening cutscene. And apparently it actually, like, gets hooked in his belt. And unless you get on the ground and crawl and then roll, it doesn't fall off of him.
Oh, my God.
And so then if you roll, then you stand up like, oh, it's on the ground. Whoop, it's off right there. And by getting all of them, that's when you get – there are a lot of side missions in the game which vary in goodness. But some of the best ones are the Deja Vu and James Vu side content, and you have to get all the Zoth patches to play them.
Mm.
Like, Deja Vu is the one where you play as PS1 version of Snake, and they basically redo the map to try to make it feel like one that would have been in Metal Gear Solid Original. And then James Vu is the... I believe it's like a blade... Well, it stars Raiden, except Raiden doesn't have a sword. But it is Raiden, and there's a bunch of references to Snatcher, his Kojima's game that he loves that no one in America can really play.
Yeah. So you got to jump through all those hoops to get the two best missions. And in a game that's so light on content already, it feels weird to hide anything.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, too, about Ground Zeroes, I may be alone in this, and there are certainly people that disagree with this, but I've always felt it to be such a cheap thing to be like, no, really, the game's much longer. Look at how many things you can pick up off the floor. Like, that's never been a fun
part
of games.
If you want, but you can always just get obsessed with speedrunning it, and instead of being an hour and a half, let's say you try to speedrun it 500 times. What's 500 times 7 minutes? 5 million hours. That game is the longest game there's ever been.
Yeah, it's just always been a cheap way. Like, I don't know. I know plenty of my friends are really big into collecting things, and that's totally cool, and they like it. But, it just doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I think that's a problem with some other reviews on that game and ones like it. Like, replayability does matter, but to just say, like, you could get this, like, this game isn't 4 hours long. You could replay this 17 times. You can do a high score run on this one helicopter level. Like, yeah, you could. You could.
That doesn't mean it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yes, anyways.
Yes. Anyways.
Moving on. Hold on. Moving on.
Number six.
Moving on.
Number six.
The Rockstar made Warriors game has a 2D brawler mode that you have to play the hell out of the game to unlock.
Oh, I love the Warriors movie. You guys know the Warriors movie?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
should. Okay. Yeah. It's
come
great.
Out and play.
I don't know anything about this game, so why don't you guys tell me a little
all right,
bit.
Well, Rockstar was flush with cash and power after the trilogy of GTA games. And so they could kind of do whatever they wanted. And because they were crazy, they're like, let's license the rights to a mid-70s cult film and then make a sequel, like remake of it, as an open-world video game.
Can you dig it?
They yeah, said that, too.
Exactly. It was full of, like, recreated scenes from the film in it. And the game, I mean, the movie definitely, like, seems to have inspired a lot of games, like Final Fight or Double Dragon, because it is just... You're a group of street toughs, gang members,
uh-huh.
who are walking through dangerous areas that are controlled by other gangs, and they gotta fight other gangs who are crazy and themed.
And all of the gangs are all themed. Like, there's the baseball Furies that have like
they're
face
the
paint and yeah. baseball bats, and they kick their asses in Central Park.
Yeah,
and there's all kinds of awesome.
But yeah,
crazy
so the game
stuff.
Was a big 3D brawler, and then once you beat the game, mm-hmm. you unlocked what was it called? Nightmare Armies of the Night, which was a 2D brawler, like an homage to games like
Streets of Rage,
TMNT Arcade,
Double Dragon,
which was a cool unlockable and super cool. And I mean, technically beating the game isn't doing a ton of work, but the problem is after you've just played through a somewhat lengthy 3D, like large open brawler, mm-hmm. then being like, here's a retro game, mm-hmm. felt kind of backwards.
Yeah, right. And that's why when they put out a PSP re-release of it, they just unlocked it from the start. Like,
yeah.
That was partially... That seemed to me them admitting a mistake was made.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the best way to do it is the way that it's done in Saints Row 4, which is just making it a half-hour-long level of the game that you have to play.
That was really funny when that happened, yeah.
Yeah, it's but yeah,
Saints Row 4. I need to go back to that.
Yaiba does this too. They have an arcade mode that's unlockable. It's like a 2D.
Is it any good?
They seem to think it was a lot better than it was. That's for sure. Though it must be better than the regular game.
I think it's better than the regular game, but it's not very good at all.
Take a suck. Yes.
Moving on.
Number five.
Crazy Taxi 3 hides 2/3 of the maps behind minigames.
Yep.
So yeah, Crazy Taxi 1, obviously a brilliant game. 2 continued that trend with bigger city. And then when 3 came out, there was only one city, whereas Crazy Taxi 2 expanded that, and it looked like the series was going to continue growing in size. But instead, when 3 came out, there was only one city. Problem is, there actually were 3 cities in the game. But if you were like most people, and every time they were like, hey, do you want to do a time trial? Or, hey, do you want to do a random minigame? You just said no. You would never have known that, because 2 of the 3 cities were only available via those minigames. And like, if I'm playing a game, like Saints Row, we'll continue on that. And there's like, oh, do you want to go do races or something? I'm usually just going to say no. I want to. Yeah. That's not why I didn't buy Crazy Taxi 3 because I wanted to do random mini games. So then to take all of that content and put it behind, like, it's almost like the modern day equivalent of like a weird paywall.
Yeah, the less fun parts of it. Like, yeah, I think I was noticing now all but the Warriors are Japanese games. And I wonder if it is just like this philosophy thing of like, hey, if you want something cool, we're not just going to give it to you. You got to earn that. You got to prove you're pro enough to get something awesome.
Yeah, you got to be a real fan. You got to
a real fan.
Dedicate your entire life to this game.
But when I think it's really weird when Crazy Taxi is the I always had fun with Crazy Taxi, but it was also a very thin game. Like you could not get away with charging $50 for the original Crazy Taxi these days.
Let alone the entry that only had the one map and its main mode.
Yeah. And so, like, when it's that thin and just starting with you with just one map, like, that's kind of a ripoff,
yeah,
honestly.
If you if you do go, the other levels that you're able to go to are West Coast and Small Apple, which are throwbacks to the originals. And you also don't get all of the songs and the soundtrack until you go through all of those minigames.
Oh, jeez. My God, yeah.
Yeah.
Granted, that's really the only song on the soundtrack that matters.
Day after day, down the way.
Number 4.
Ninja Gaiden on Xbox has odd requirements to unlock the original trilogy. God. You have to shoot Greedo first. Original trilogy.
I get it.
That was
I got
really bad.
It.
I was looking directly at you hoping for the Star Wars pity laugh, and you glared at me like,
your terrible joke was
I'm like, why are you bringing Greedo into this?
Anyway,
yeah,
so yeah.
I remember trying to unlock this because I had looked it up when I was playing the original Ninja Gaiden on Xbox.
Probably on Cheat Planet.
Yeah, probably on Cheat Planet back in the day. But yeah, you have to get the all 50 of the scarab beetle thing, the golden thing. And they were so hard to find, and I remember trying to do it, and it just was impossible.
There was one I couldn't get until I like just went to the bookstore and read the guide for it, which was one where you had to like wall jump between two pillars that seemingly you couldn't, like they didn't look like you could wall jump between them, and then at the top was the last scarab.
Yeah, and so the way you have to do it is, so you want to unlock the first scarab, you need to the first game, you have to collect all of the 50 of the golden hidden scarabs and trade them for an OG NG. And then...
Oh, yeah, you have to go to the store. It doesn't even unlock it. You have to...
And to get the second and third one, you have to... I'm just reading this straight from the Rudden's article because it's super complex and dumb. You need to shoot an arrow at a clock and then revisit the spot that you had found the one of the golden scarabs. And then, once you do all that, you can go to Ryu's safe house to play the games. You can't access them through the main menu unless you just beat the game again after unlocking all of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
No yeah, offense. It was good. That was just the cruelty of that game, and that in a way I kind of appreciate that Itagaki was such a dick. Like he was just, he was just so committed to he's like, yeah. No, you gotta earn this.
I mean the first boss is probably the hardest boss in that entire game.
It might be. Well, do you mean the nunchuck battle?
The nunchuck guy.
That horse battle, the guy on the horseback is that
I wouldn't
harder.
Say that guy is well, they're all hard.
Well, Alma's the
Alma's
hardest.
Alma's the hardest Alma, one.
Especially if you don't have that Nimpo the fireball, like you're just dead. You're gonna lose.
But like even just the first boss, you're getting used to playing the freaking game if you just started, and then this guy just tears you apart. But that game is just unforgiving.
Why and you could just save yourself into a bad situation? Like, there was no going back. Like you by the middle point of the game, you would only have 3 health vials, and if you used them before you got in that boss fight, then you'd only have and if you saved with low health, well you're just dead. Like, you're fucked. Like.
And then, while you have that problem, trying to collect 50 golden scarabs.
Yeah, and if you're the biggest fan, if you're a huge fan of Ninja Gaiden, who like was waiting for this to know that those games are on there, like it's such a mean tease. I think they were opened up in later in the Black Edition of it or the PS3 version of it. But one other thing about it was that like Itagaki hated when they changed it to. When he had to like make things easier, like he definitely like shit all over the PS3 version that made his game easier, more approachable. And when in Black, in the Black Edition, he had to like add that he was pushed into adding an easy mode, and at the beginning of the easy mode, like I think you have to lose a lot first, and then a message is shot to you at the beginning, and when you grab it, it says like. You can leave the way of the ninja and take the easier route if you want. And then it puts a pink ribbon around your arm to denote, like, you suck.
Wow.
Oh, Itagaki.
It's a great game.
Number 3.
Mario Kart Super Circuit's best tracks require you to race every other track or every other cup twice.
Yep.
Oh my god, this would drive me insane.
Yeah, this seems to be the same thing of like, oh, you want the retro tracks? Like, well, you got to work for them. We're not just going to give them to you.
That's changed a lot because now they just, like, when you start the game because they want to overload you, like, look how much content there is. There's double the number of cups that you expected because half of them are old.
I like that there was, like, barely any Mario Kart embargo because they were just like, yeah, who cares? Like, here's every racer. No, really, all of them. And here's every track. We're going to post every video of every track before you guys even can.
Yeah.
It's very different than Nintendo usually was. I remember when I reviewed Super Mario 3D Land, in the embargo, they're like, don't tell anyone there's a full entire other game after you beat the main game. I was like,
but people are going to want to know that. That's
this
a reason
is the best
to...
part of the game.
Yeah. But the way it works is it was before they realized that people would just play the old tracks and be happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were extra cup tracks that you'd have to, in order to do them, you'd have to complete all of the standard courses twice and get 100 coins. You'd have to go through them and get the gold trophy or the gold cup in all of them, and then you'd have to play them all again and get 100 coins. You couldn't just get the gold cup and 100 coins in the same run. They had to be separate runs.
God. This is giving me flashbacks to when I used to test for Sony and I had to do the... Wipeout HD platinum runs like once a week. That was the worst situation.
If we got you a copy of that game, would you be able to smoke us all in it?
I could get a platinum in like 35 hours.
That's a lot of hours.
You said that as if that was really fast.
I was waiting for minutes.
It takes a long time.
Wow. Ugh. Man. Jeez. Sounds like the worst job.
Yeah, it does. My favorite part is that Sony had created... Is that show still going, The Testers?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they created a show in which, congratulations, you won. Here's the shittiest job on the planet.
Congratulations. A job that literally any of you could have just gone to Craigslist... Go to Craigslist and go to, like, the miscellaneous help section, and there's just nothing but, like, hey, we need somebody to come play video games all the time. We're making a reality show out of that the reward is the worst job in the world.
And it's funny because they started that show like immediately after I had quit because I couldn't take it anymore.
Good times.
Number 2. Ready, go!
Umjammer Lammy has to complete her performance before Parappa takes the stage.
Yeah, anybody else play Umjammer?
No, I never did.
Man, you're a PlayStation kid,
I know.
I'm surprised. Well,
I played the same exact demo of Parappa like 800 times.
Well, yeah, everybody loved Parappa, and the normal way of thinking is just, oh, they'll have a Parappa 2, which they eventually did on the PS2, but what came first was Umjammer Lammy, which was like purposefully weird, even weirder than Parappa. And instead of rapping, someone will say something and then you give a cool guitar lick back at them like, we got to stop this quick. And you can unlock whammy pedals and all that stuff. Whammy bars and pedal, whatever.
Distortion pedals.
Yeah.
Distortion. Yeah, whammy bars.
But so they deny people a Parappa 2, even though it is very much, it's in the universe of Parappa. It's more of a spinoff. And then once you beat everything, all of a sudden, without any, like, reveal it ahead of time, Parappa just shows up. He's like, now you can play the game as Parappa, and you can do all the songs again. Yeah, but then in the guitar parts, Parappa sings back to them, so it's brand new songs, basically.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, that'd be really frustrating, especially for people who had been waiting for specifically a Parappa sequel.
Yeah. Wait. I'm down.
What are we waiting for?
Well, I just wanted to listen to it.
You said wait.
Well, yeah, I said wait because I wanted to hear Master Onion say.
So, yeah, they kind of just hid all that content. Even though, again, it would have made sense if at the beginning of each level you could have just chosen, like, oh, I want to play this one as this character or this one as this character. Even if, like, the first quarter of the game you played as Lammy.
Yeah. If then Parappa showed up, like, hey, you can switch out. But I kind of appreciate it in the end of, like, that's a fun prank that they put all that work into Parappa and that a lot of people would never see it. And that also, like, they here's another Lammy fact for you.
Lammy fact.
We do need a sound effect when I talk about these things. But that in the U.S. version, they made a change to it in the U.K. and Japanese versions of the game. Lammy dies and goes to hell and has to battle her evil demon twin to get out of hell. But in the game, in the U.S. game, they're like, oh, no, the Bible Belt will freak the fuck out if we have devils in this. And so instead, they just turned it into her, like, she's in Hawaii or something. It is against a gross singer idol. But it's very weird.
We actually had that in Lucas Sullivan's Scariest Moments in Otherwise Unfrightening Games. It was number two on the list, and it was A Journey Through Hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty creepy. I'm surprised, too, that they actually, like, double localized it. Like, I figured if they're going to go the trouble of localizing it one way for Europe, then they'd keep it the same in America.
Not so.
Number one!
The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D makes the Master Quest redundant. So, Henry, what was this one? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Yeah, it was just that the Master Quest is always kind of been... It's a staple of the Zelda series, but in the original... Even in the original game, it was there. You beat the game, and then Zelda says, have I got another quest for you? And then it's just a remix of it, like, surprisingly, like, heavily remixed. Like,
I think the original... the original was a bit different because the entrances to the dungeons were different.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside of the dungeon was remixed, so it wasn't... the layout was completely
And different enemies, too.
Yeah.
Or, like, different layout of enemies. But you could get to it from the start if you knew the secret that you make your file name Zelda. Yep. You would get the Master Quest from the start. And then there was rumors that they would have a Master Quest in Ocarina of Time, but they didn't originally on the N64 version. Then when they repackaged it on the GameCube, it came with the Master Quest already open. So you should have repeated on Legend of Zelda, the 3D version of Ocarina of Time, but instead, nope, old rules, beat it, then get the Master Quest, which is like, if somebody is playing Ocarina 3D and they want to play the Master Quest, they have likely already beaten Ocarina of Time twice in their life, if not more, and now they're being told, beat it again to then get the fun Master Quest.
Yeah.
So as somebody who, I finished Ocarina of Time, but does the Master Quest just basically put you through the same journey all over again with just slightly different locations? Or
All of the dungeons are remade, so all the layouts of the dungeons are completely different. There's more difficult enemies, like, for example, the Deku Nut Tree, like the very first level will have, like, a Staphos skeleton knight in it.
Yeah, so it's pretty much like they just did, like, a, you know, in MMO sometimes when you hit level 60 you can go back and do a harder version of a
right.
instance. Yeah. It's basically that except with Zelda.
I see. Okay.
And I think they learned their lesson from this one. They listened to fans because I can't remember if this was the case in Link Between Worlds, but in Wind Waker, from the start, they're like, if you want the Hero's Quest, you can just do it now. Like, just press start.
Yeah, Nintendo recently, they're just giving you that content right away.
Mm-hmm. I think they have learned some lessons.
Well, the Link Between Worlds, you had to beat the game to get the Hero Mode, which was just the enemies are stronger. They do more damage to you.
But, I mean, that was the first time anybody had played through it. It wasn't a remake either. So
The remakes, they should just have it, have the Master Quest stuff available right from the start, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So hopefully they continue that trend, because otherwise they'll have their games landing on the top 7 awesome unlockables that were way too hidden.
Part 2.
Be sure to come back every week for a new top 7 on GamesRadar.com. The reason Lucas Sullivan isn't in this room right now is because he's putting the finishing touches on his top 7,
ooh,
which I would tease if I could remember. Oh, it involves a mechanic from a game that we talked about last week, I believe. That's a tease. You're supposed to have that confused look on your face.
Thank you.
That's all I wanted.
What?
All right, we'll be right back with current events. Stay tuned. Radio Radar is brought to you in part by Audible.com, where you can download audiobooks like Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, and Ready Player One. Download a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/gamesradar. Welcome back to episode 90 of Radio Radar. We're going to dive into current events. First up, Metro Redux is officially totally happening. It's going to be Metro 1 and 2 remade for next gen. Ryan, you've played both games. Should people give a shit?
Oh, yes.
How many shits?
A lot of shits, okay. Actually. Like, so this is really exciting because the first Metro game, Metro 2033, which is based on a novel, if you didn't know that, that one only came out on PC and Xbox 360. I think that was never out on PS3.
Probably couldn't make it work on it.
And the thing was, like, cause, so I played this through. I played this on PC, and I had to buy an entire new graphics card to even get it to run. The Metro games are very well known for how pretty they are. Also how bleak and atmospheric they are. You're playing in a post-apocalypse.
They're sort of like the Stalker of the recent generation in that they're like post-apocalyptic, moody, known for being beautiful, and everybody mm-hmm. kind of forgets they exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really, really fantastic games. And, you know, honestly, like I tried them out a little bit on the 360 and PS3 because Metro Last Light just came out, what, last year? Year before?
Last year, I think.
Yeah, last year. And, gosh, yeah, the those consoles just do not do those games justice. So this Redux package, it's both games for probably like $40 or $50. Maybe it'll be $60. I don't know if they've even announced a price. But regardless, it's going to be both of them in a single package. Mm-hmm. You know, on the new gen consoles, and they're going to be. This is a really, really good opportunity for this game to re-enter the spotlight. I think this whole franchise.
Yeah, I'm interested to finally play them. I had missed them the other times, partially because I was probably playing some Nintendo game at the time, but also also because I'd kind of heard about the PC version. Just play that. That's mm-hmm. the best. I'm like, then I don't want
$50.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think that's an amazing deal because
it's a steal.
These are not these aren't typical like Call of Duty corridor shooters either, right? Like they're corridor
scary.
In the sense that mostly they take place underground in the metro tunnels.
How great is it when you're rewarded for not playing the game everybody told you to play? This is an instance where everybody listening to this podcast who didn't play it probably heard from all their friends like you have to play it, but now it's like aha! It's like everybody who ignored Persona until the Golden came out. It's like yes, now I get the definitive version.
Yeah,
go screw yourself.
No, I urge everybody that has any interest in shooters, especially ones that do some really cool things with atmosphere.
Yeah,
these are games you're going to want to check out.
I'm starting to get the feeling these days that like unless there is some weird legal BS that happens with the game. Any game of note will get re-released.
Any game, like, well, I think any game of note, for the most part, that had a PC version that looked a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Like, The Last of Us is sort of the exception, but for the most part, like, Tomb Raider, the PC version looked so much better.
Yeah.
And they just put that on the next-gen system?
Trying to think, what other games were there that had, like, unbelievably good-looking PC versions and okay-looking console versions?
I honestly feel...
Hitman?
Hitman looked all right, I think.
Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, there have been all sorts of rumors about Skyrim coming next gen. I wouldn't be surprised if that eventually happens.
Or Crysis 3. They could do a Crysis 2 and 3 bundle.
Yeah.
That'd be 5.
Well, there was also
that
the
never
Crysis,
had a PC.
There was the Crysis XBLA release as well of Crysis 1.
Yeah,
so they could just do Crysis Trilogy.
Yeah, I would be shocked, actually, if we don't see a Crysis-like Trilogy pack because those even the first Crysis by today's standards still looks amazing.
Yeah, it holds up visually.
Yeah, and arguably it's one of the best games in that trilogy, too.
Crysis 1?
Yeah. Isn't it? I can't remember.
I put Crysis Warhead above it.
Okay. Well, yeah, a lot of people
Crysis Warhead's super good because Crysis 1 was like, we're going to take ourselves seriously. And Crysis 2 is like, remember that jackass from the first game who you didn't like?
Mm-hmm.
Play as him and everything makes more sense now.
Yeah, I'm excited because I think there's a big opportunity here for a lot of games like the Metro series to resurface on our new gen. Not next gen, new gen.
New gen. Running a blazing 60 frames a second on a PS4.
And as we talked about last week with Halo 5 being a 2015 game, and like 2015 is looking a little sexier than 2014 in some ways, that I think just to fill out 2014, like we'll just see a lot more of these HD+ remakes.
Yeah, because it's basically like, listen, you're going to have to put some work into it.
Yeah.
But it's not as much work as, like, taking a game that only had a PS3 version and putting it on next gen. You already have a PC version that looks a huge amount better, so you might as well just re-release it.
And also, Henry, on that point, too, like, it totally makes sense that 2015 is certainly going to be an insane year for big releases because, really, you know, that is kind of like that sweet spot where, okay, now we know developers have had access to the hardware for 3-ish years, and especially on new platforms, my understanding is that's usually a good amount of time for development.
And let's actually look back. We did the top 7 best years in gaming. If you go back, 2007 is number 2 on the list. The second best year in gaming. New consoles back then launched in 2005 and 2006. Right. It took 2 years to get to the point where we got...
best year is what? Was that 98?
98.
Which, again, is the same scenario.
And also 2004 was a really great
2004
year.
2004 was... Yeah. Is that almost all three of them were...
Pretty much.
2 years after the consoles launched?
Well, You know, 2015, maybe 2016, one of those 2 years is going to be just absolutely batshit insane with next gen release or new gen games.
Yeah, new gen's a good word to use.
New gen.
I mean, we'll get Final Fantasy 15.
Battlefront.
Yeah, there's lots of cool stuff on the horizon. A lot of it we don't even know of yet. Very excited. That's one of the reasons I'm so excited for E3 is because we're going to see a lot of teases probably for some of the stuff we have to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was worried. So much stuff is being revealed ahead of E3. I'm hoping to still get a lot of surprises at E3.
Like, yeah.
Now I'm interested. I'm going back. So the SNES launched in America in 91.
It had awesome games from the start. It had Mario World. It had F-Zero. It had Final Fantasy 2/4.
Yeah, but none of those were on this top 7. What was 94, which was 2 or 3 years later. And then you got the...
94 was a better year, yes.
N64 launching in 96. And right on this list. 97 was good, but 98 was better. It's a pretty consistent trend of 2 to 3 years being the best year in the which is kind of scary because it means like next year is the best year we're gonna get for new gen. Deal with it. So yeah, other big news. Twitch might be being bought by YouTube for around $1 billion. Does that sound like enough money?
Well, you know, it does in the sense that does Twitch. I can be entirely wrong here, so feel free to call me out. Does Twitch know how to monetize its audience?
Well, I mean, or you see those pre-roll ads.
Yeah, pre-roll ads. But I'm saying, like, I thought I read somewhere that they're like, how do we make money off of this? Because the ads just aren't enough.
Yeah, but I've also heard YouTube's kind of running into the same problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So
it goes back to the thing where everybody keeps saying that video is the future and everybody needs to get to streaming and everybody needs to get the video. And then they get there and it's just like, how do we actually make money off of this?
Because I know, of course, popular streamers are making a lot of money on this because comparatively, it's easy for them to spend a day streaming and make ad revenue. But when you have to an entire service like this to support, I don't think that's enough. And so I'm really curious to see what they decide to do. If you know, Twitch is the biggest streaming site, and now it is owned by Google or YouTube because YouTube is a subsidiary of Google.
They're all the same now.
You know, but if Google continues to buy up all of these big things and you want to stream, perhaps they can put it behind a paywall. Although I think that would just open up an opportunity for all the smaller streaming services to eat up a lot of the people that are looking to jump ship if it were to cost money to do that. I don't know. I'm really interested to see what they would do.
I think trying to actually make a career or money out of get a real income out of streaming is like the same as the gold rush was in the 1800s, which like everybody like, here there's gold. Everybody comes there looking for gold and like three people find it and all the rest of them just waste their money on booze and hookers until they die in a gutter. And I feel like that's what's going to happen with streaming.
Well, also keep this in mind. Yeah, you're right, Henry, because now that the console market has access to streaming just as easily as the PC crowd does, Twitch is going to blow up. Like, they're going to, I mean, that stuff has only been available on the new gen consoles for what, 6 months maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's like, just wait until these consoles really sell big numbers and people really start digging into streaming. Twitch can easily like quadruple in size in the span of 2 years.
Well, they have so few games right now on next gen that you can't, there's not a lot of streaming options you have, but like, if you can stream, once PlayStation Now happens, if you could stream like PS1 games, like, and you just had this huge library of PS1 games just to play randomly, like, that interests me more than just if I were to say, hey, I'm streaming, Battlefield 4. Watch me. Like, nobody, that's not as exciting as watching me play Gex 3.
Yeah, now that the, that.
Right, guys? Gex 3.
Now that streaming or Twitch is on Xbox One, I've been watching a lot more Twitch. Well, a lot more is, you know, more than zero amount of time.
My wonder is, like,
it's awesome.
Is yes, I think it's going to get bigger as more people get access to it. But I'm wondering if we're sort of seeing, like, there's going to be certain personalities that get a ton of people watching them, and there's going to be there's always going to be an audience for esports and speedrunners. But I feel like as more people get their hands on Xbox Ones and PS4s and just more people are trying their hands at it, I don't actually see it growing in terms of just like the average person streaming or the average person watching the average person streaming.
When I say growing, I mean I think a lot of more people will just do it. I don't necessarily mean that a lot more people are suddenly going to cultivate a following for it.
Well, if everybody's streaming, who's watching the stream?
Well, I mean, that's
actually
part
that's
of the issue.
That's the rumored sequel to Watchmen.
Well, it is an interesting point, and I think it will be something that they'll have to figure out. I don't know. Like, it's weird to me that people like watching other people play video games in their spare time. Like, I like watching esports because for me, I really get into the competitive scene, and I kind of know now who some of these teams and players are. But I wouldn't really watch just some person play a game.
It's kind of funny because it's like you watch it for the same reason that somebody turns on the NFL.
Yeah.
But it's like if there was a website where it's like, yo, we got cameras hooked up in people's backyards and you can just watch them throw the ball around with their kids. It's like nobody would watch that. That's basically what watching
find
like
a thousand people.
Yeah, but that's
in
like
the world who'd watch it.
That's like what watching like me or you play League of Legends is like.
Yeah.
It's like watching like, oh, look, you can tune into this stream and see like a high school soccer game. It's like, why would I watch that when the World Cup is on? And there's always like esports, there's always like professional speedrunners. You're never not going to be able to find that. That's why I'm sort of confused by people who are just like trying to make themselves streaming personalities with a few exceptions.
Well, one thing I think we will see too is I think esports in general are really going to grow pretty quickly now. Just because, like,
they're already hiring people like Tom Agrino.
what I mean is,
he's going to tank esports. He's going to ruin it for everyone.
You are aware that there are professional Call of Duty teams, but nobody watches that. Where the hell do you even watch it? I don't know.
Right.
But now, like, I think the fact that so many people have access to showcasing their abilities through streaming or however they want to do it. I don't know. I think that there are a lot more ways to easily get that more easily get that in front of people on a much bigger scale than there's ever
been. On that note, do you think it's interesting that like Call of Duty esports is kind of small compared to a lot of ones? Isn't it kind of interesting to me that there isn't the League of Legends of shooters in terms of an esports following?
In terms,
there used to be. I think one of the reasons might be is because like, you have companies that are actually trying to make money on shooters know that bigger is better, and Battlefield will never have an esports audience because you're not going to have like, I got my 32 guy team, we're ready to fly to Vancouver for this convention. Like, nobody's really making those small scale shooters anymore, and you kind of need the game to be really, really, really popular to get an esports audience to begin with. Like, we may see that happen this generation. It might end up being fucking The Order.
Well,
like, who knows? Or if the next Gears, they put more emphasis on trying to get the multiplayer balance. But we really don't have that game.
Well, I think the problem with that is that there's not going to be a League of Legends 2. Like, it'll just always be League of Legends. But they have to put out an annual or biannual release for major shooters. So even if, like, they want you to buy the next Call of Duty, they don't want you to cultivate a team for Modern Warfare 3, they want you to buy the next
one. And I know that has an esports community, and I guess it's interesting that almost all of the super popular esports games are games that are basically real-time strategy games. Mm-hmm. Like, that real-time strategy is dead, pretty much. And yet the biggest esports are League of Legends, Dota, and StarCraft 2, which is, they're all built on the backs of RTSs.
How big is the Counter-Strike crowd?
I have no idea. It's pretty sizable, but not huge.
Because that game hasn't changed. Well, it much, has, yeah. But like, you know what I mean.
Well, Counter-Strike, even though Valve's attempted to get that on consoles a few times, like it's still just like a PC thing. Like yeah. Nobody on consoles really plays
that. I was surprised. I had heard people just hated Go when it first came out, and now everybody's kind of warmed up to it, right?
Well, it's just gradual balance changes and that sort of stuff.
Going over the top games on Twitch right now, League of Legends is number one at 230,000 people watching. The LCS is going on right now.
Yeah,
right?
So,
Below that is Hearthstone, which I actually don't see having a competitive, like an esports community, because I just don't think Blizzard's... It could.
Do these broadcasts have, like, commercial breaks yet?
They do.
Well, okay. They do, but they don't actually break for them, usually.
Do people do product placement in them?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But, yeah, you got Hearthstone, Dota 2, DayZ. DayZ's not going to get a competitive community. Counter-Strike Global Offensive is actually pretty high up, but then besides that, you have to go down to, like, there's 8,000 people watching Marvel vs. Capcom. Like, it's crazy that, oh, wow, there's a lot of people watching Neopets right now. why are 8,000 people watching Neopets?
It's crazy that Twitch has this thing where it's, like, interactive entertainment where you could, like, actually, like, chat with the people and do all these cool things that you wouldn't be able to do with TV. But once, if you're watching this League of Legends thing, the chat's going by so fast that it's not even, like, you're not even... talking to anybody anymore.
So this kind of ties back into one of the points John brought up earlier too, about like, why would you watch a kid play baseball in his backyard or whatever? Right. Like, one difference here is that, really doesn't apply to the average person, I suppose. But one difference in esports is like, there's really no barrier to entry in this. Like, if I'm watching football or whatever, like, I know I personally will never be a professional football player or even a competitive football player ever.
Or you may be able to count on your hand how many times in the rest of your life you'll play football outside.
Yeah, exactly. Zero. I know this. But I might enjoy football, right? Like,
right.
But a big difference in esports is like I can watch a professional League of Legends player play a game on Twitch, and what he's doing oftentimes is providing commentary while he's playing to help me improve,
help
his viewership improve. And so it's got this really cool... Like, it's beneficial to both sides because, A, they're getting money from their viewership just from their ad rolls, or people who are paying to subscribe to them to not have ads, and the viewers are learning something and are able to improve themselves.
So it's like hanging out with, I don't know.
It's like hanging out with your uncle who's really good at football.
With Joe Montana.
Yeah, it's like private tips for free, you know? Like,
and,
it's really cool.
And it's worth noting that the difference is if you watch, like, a football game and then you go play in your backyard, you're playing in your backyard, tripping over dog shit. But when you're playing, like, League of Legends or Counter-Strike or whatever, you're going and playing in the same arena that the pros are playing in for the most part. You may not be sitting in an auditorium with 5,000 people chanting mid or IAFK, but...
Jungle!
Yeah.
So,
gank the guy! Gank him!
I think League of Legends is a really cool glimpse at maybe what we're heading toward with eventually, several years from now, other types of games following suit.
It's really odd to me. Like, I have no idea where it's going to go, and I just don't understand it at this point.
The bubble's going to burst.
Yeah.
Streaming bubble.
Well, this was one last thing I had heard about a fear of YouTube getting it, is that YouTube has really good content catching laws that like to make sure you're not uploading somebody else's protected content.
Right.
So that video and sound, like, they're very good at getting that. And, you know, the streamers, you couldn't stream like an NFL game on Twitch either. They'd take that down. But some people, when they play games on the streams, they're playing copywritten music while they play. They're just like, hey, I want to listen to my music while I play this game.
Yeah.
And you can hear it too. Like, will YouTube start using its stuff that when some guy's playing a Dave Matthews song on a stream that they're going to shut it down?
Oh, I think Twitch has something built in right now, or I could be wrong, but has like a little pop-up that lets you know what the song is, or certain streamers do that, and then you can click to download it. It's sort of the workaround. But I honestly feel like if this happens... This isn't going to be like when a company buys another company, they like absorb it and take it over. For me, this would probably be something more along the lines of like Twitch would probably still operate as it does now, sort of like the Facebook Oculus Rift thing, where it's like they just want to own the users and to be able to sell ads to Twitch's people, because that will probably lead to them being a bigger company.
Yeah.
Because the one thing Google needs to be, bigger company.
The ever-watching eye of Google.
One final point. and this is just while we're talking about esports in general, I just think it's really badass that you can make a living now playing a video game.
Oh, man. Not you, the person listening to this.
Not me.
Or the people listening to this.
But people. Because I just remember all the years growing up playing games, and my parents were like, "You can't, you got to give that up, man. What are you going to do for a job?" It's like, well, if I was good at League of Legends 20 years ago, maybe I'd fucking be a professional.
If they would have let you practice more Red Alert, you might have the micro and the macro you need to play.
I also think it's going to be really interesting, like trying to convince your parents, like, no, let me play like 8 hours a day. I can make it pro, and they'll be like, just fucking.
The funny thing is, like, if you're like, nah, man, I want to be an athlete. I want to be a football player. Let me practice. You leave that, even if you don't have the ability to join NFL. Like, I'm super in shape. I am an active person, but if for 2 years you just play League for 12 hours a day, at the end of that you're like, I can't go pro, you're like, I probably have diabetes now. Yeah. Like, it's basically like everybody who doesn't make League ends up blowing their knee and can't make it pro.
Did you guys? You either make it pro or you're forever
you'll
fucked.
Just have esports injuries.
Did you guys see that HBO?
Mid or heartbreak.
Did you guys see that attack. HBO sports thing where they make fun of all the League players on it? Last year they did their end of the year thing where everybody goes over. It was Brian Gumbel's sports show on HBO.
Was it where a bunch of old people sitting around talking?
Well, yeah.
About
so the show is
they're just playing video games.
The show is a bunch of old sports writers who worked on like ESPN and stuff. But this is them doing important sports news, and it's a good show. I haven't watched it in a while, but I really liked it. But they were going over their favorite stories of the year, and one of the women on the group, like she.
Well, League of Legends is five people versus five people, two teams, each person has a base, and whichever team destroys the base first wins.
If that's news to you, you're increasingly in the minority. Because, brace yourself, more Americans play this game than play America's pastime, baseball.
Brace
from
yourself.
Little League to the majors combined.
It's a sweet-ass fiddlesticks.
And today is their World Series.
Tell me a little bit about what I'm going to see today.
We have the two teams, the Korean team and the Chinese team, Royal and SKT1.
They're the two best teams in the world, going head-to-head for $1 million cash.
League of Legends World Championship Final.
I just need to address that she has the worst TV voice ever.
The kinds of athletes you'd pay good money to see, well, you probably wouldn't have been able to get a ticket anyway. There isn't an empty seat in the house.
Everyone just likes watching good players perform well at any sport. Like, that's why basketball is famous. That's why football is famous.
What do you love about League of Legends?
When you reach that critical point where you know you've secured the game because you outplayed the other team, like, that's the point that I live for, that I'm like, wow. Because without this drive, like, what other motivation can cause you to play 60-hour weeks?
No one expected
that. Okay, so at the end
hours.
Of that, at the end of that video, they cut back to the group, and then they're all, she's like, oh, and so, hey, what'd you guys think of this? And they're just like, what are these mega nerds? They have a sport. Like, most of them go into jock mode of just like,
yeah.
God, look at these nerds. They want to call this a sport. Why do we even show this?
You know, and it's.
I think I have that part too.
Right. And it's. Let's listen to it. Yeah.
There's strategy involved. You have to physically be able to do it. They're competing. Listen, is it a sport or not? I believe it's a sport. They get sports visas to enter the country.
That's not a sport.
That's not a sport.
It's not a real sport. It's not a real sport. 20 million people who are watching the damn thing.
And the money
they
got
to be crazier than the ones
big money to watch it.
These are the oldest, whitest people, for the most part, in this room.
It's really frustrating to listen to, because if they had any fucking clue as to what is involved in competitive play of any
Here's the thing. If I took debate in high school, so I know this.
Mm-hmm.
The argument of what is a sport is easily the worst argument you can ever be a part of, because it's a word that doesn't actually have a... It doesn't actually matter. For some reason, when people get into this argument of like whether or not it's a sport or not, they suddenly think, is it football?
Yeah.
And because, like, and when I was in high school and there was like a debate thing, there would always be like a debate of like, I'm going to debate is cheerleading a sport? And it's like, well, it's really hard. It's like to do it. It's like, okay, that's not actually a qualification. Well, you do it competitively. All right, that's not a qualification. But technically, all of these things are qualifications and everything is a sport because it's just a fucking word and it has no meaning.
Yeah. But, I had something to say.
Well,
okay. Go ahead, Henry.
Well, that's shaky ground to stand on of just like, oh, 20 million people watch it. They must be crazy. Like, people are the people that watch other sports, like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Like,
what I was going to say was, and I forget the exact statistic, but when we were watching the World Championships last year mm-hmm. of League of Legends, its viewership was something like, now this is only like, that was the third season that League had ever had of competitive play, and its viewership was already like
32 million.
Yeah.
Holy
32 million people. Right,
and
in 3 years, you've generated 32 million viewers of your competitive scene, right? And it's continuing to grow.
How many views for the Super Bowl last year?
No, somebody made that comparison. It was like an eighth of the viewership of the Super Bowl's most popular viewed, whichever year had the most views of the Super Bowl, League's third year had an eighth of that viewership already.
Oh my God.
Right, and it's like.
That's also worldwide,
so
too.
Yeah.
That's
not, yeah, it is worldwide.
And also, but I mean, if you go to like the World Series ends up having like going to more recent ones, you get like 7 million people watching it. Getting pretty close to that.
Yeah, I feel like it's just those old guys going like, a video game? What? Yeah. You're going to watch me play Pac-Man next?
Yeah, and just arguing over whether or not it's a sport is very dumb. There's so many different definitions. Most of them are just, the actual regular quote-unquote definition is just like, an activity involving physical exertion and skill in which an individual or team competes against others. All right, then it's a sport.
Yeah.
Stop arguing, old people. whether or not you think sport needs to be like, you need to tackle somebody, that's on you. But you see these guys, they're fucking, also, a majority of them are actually in shape, which is kind of funny.
Oh, the players?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's funny, too, because when you hear them, they have, like, these players are young kids, too. Like, we're talking 17-year-old dudes making six-figure salaries playing this game. But they also need to hire, a lot of the teams live together in a house, like a dorm-style living situation. They also hire team managers. They hire life coaches because they're making a shit ton of money and don't know what to do with it. Like,
right.
They don't know how to handle that.
That's what happens to, like, rock stars and rappers.
Yeah. And they have to go to the... have to exercise regularly because obviously sitting in a chair, as we do for 16 hours,
you'll just all die.
You will fucking die.
Yeah. In the lobby screen, they're just doing a bunch of push-ups.
Yeah.
Well, that money thing is what I watched a whole documentary on ESPN about. That's what happens to almost every sports star. Like, most of them come straight out of college, if not skip college, and just go straight to making $1 million a year. And these are kids who have never, like, they just moved out of home for the first time, and then they're handed a $2 million. Like, well, deal with it. Like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. No, and I know probably a lot of people listening are like, well, fucking just, what do you mean deal with it? That's so easy. But it's like, I bet it's not.
Yeah.
I bet it's not easy to be handed $2 million and be like, use this responsibly when you are 17
years
old.
Yeah, I was going to say, if somebody handed me $2 million right now, it would not be. I personally think I could deal with that shit. But at 17, maybe not.
Well, you're old now.
Yeah, I'm old now. Now I'd be like, oh, which one of my bank account, which one yields the highest percentage investment
income. You've had a job and you've had to
pay off my debts, put half of it in the bank, buy a sports car,
every person
do coke,
every
die.
Person that ever met you would just show up and be so hey, you got some money, huh? I've got a great idea.
That's what happened to Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah. No, I've read this whole article about like how he's going to just die broke because even though he's like one of the richest boxers of all time.
His posse is like 400 people.
Yeah. That he has a person on his staff who just has to say no to him because if anybody comes up and asks him for money because he was homeless at one point in his life, if someone comes up to ask him for money, he's like, yes. And so he had to have a guy who's just guarding him the whole time, like, no, you can't give money. Like, no, sorry, go away.
The thing about Filipino culture, too, is like people, if somebody asks you for something, you're like obligated to give it to you. If I went to the Philippines with my family, and I was walking down the street, and some guy asked me for my shoes. Mm-hmm. I would be expect to give him my shoes and take chinelas, the flip flops.
Wow!
What if you asked him for his shoes back?
I don't know.
Give me
how have
shoes.
You?
I think that's rude.
How have you guys not figured that part out?
I think that's
okay,
rude
that's
to ask
fair.
For a gift back.
or okay, that's.
I'm just
curious.
I'm just guessing. I'm just going to say that it's rude.
Okay,
maybe.
It's taboo.
Yeah.
Learned
Fair
a lot
enough.
About Filipino culture.
Yeah, I was thinking about playing the national anthem, but I thought that would be one step too far.
Mm, I don't even know what it sounds like.
Well, now we got to look it up.
I also read in that thing that it's like the Catholic Church, too. Like, Manny Manny, it's alleged that he sins a bit, but that so then to apologize, he's got to give millions of dollars to the Catholic Church.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually just this.
it's just a drum roll.
Oh, no, I do know this.
This is kind of badass. All right, I faded it out. That's respectful. So, last bit of news. Take-Two has filed a trademark for a game, or game property called City Stories. Are we thinking it's the DLC, or are we thinking it's a handheld?
It's about time for some DLC for it. Though now, like, they haven't even announced any DLC. I definitely don't think it's a handheld because handhelds are dead to Rockstar right now. What, would they put it on the Vita and sell to no one? Maybe they'd make an iPad game.
Ooh, maybe if they are making a next-gen version, maybe they're waiting to announce the DLC until they announce the next-gen version, and then it's going to come packed in with the next-gen version but be DLC for last-gen.
That would not surprise me. I once doubted that there would be a new-gen re-release of it. I was like, oh, they never do that. But it's really looking, the fact that they have yet to announce DLC for it, like 8 months in from release, it's getting suspicious. Like, it feels like they are just waiting. And also, like, if this fall is it keeps getting weaker, like, you need something like a Take-Two. Like, what's Take-Two putting out else this year that we know about, like, the
Evolve,
Borderlands
Evolve.
Prequel?
Evolve.
Oh, Evolve. Okay.
Civ. Right. Beyond Earth.
Actually, they've got a pretty good. they don't need it. The Take Two. Well, yeah, that Take Two's now looking pretty shaped up, and Ubisoft. also, Ubisoft. They've got Assassin's Creed and Far Cry 4.
Like, yeah,
Ubisoft's looking pretty good.
And I bet you we're gonna see more from everyone because E3 is right around the corner. Mm-hmm. So we'll find out more about City Stories then.
All right, prediction. Let's do a prediction so you can set up for a correction later. Like, so if it were to get announced at E3 and Rockstar doesn't do a lot of stuff at E3, it would probably be during one of the press conferences.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think it would be Microsoft or Sony that would get the reveal of it?
Microsoft.
I vote Sony.
I'm going to go with Microsoft. I think they know that they need something, and I think that they know a re-release of GTA 5 would probably be that.
Nintendo.
Nice.
Oh, Lorenzo. That,
the name City Stories, instead of calling it Grand Theft Auto, they just call it City Stories.
Yeah, City Stories.
T-rated.
Tomodachi Stories. yeah, so let's jump over to the reviews, starting with Transistor, and I have a feeling I should probably play the main title track from that
game.
Oh,
yes. I love that song.
Woo. Ryan, how much of it have you played?
About 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours in. Ish.
Ish?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Here we go. Oh. When you speak, I hear silence. So, yeah. Transistor.
God damn, that song is so good. That whole soundtrack is amazing.
It is. It's really good. I was going to say sequel, but the next game from the Bastion developer, Supergiant Games. If you played Bastion, you know, it was a top-down hack-and-slash kind of game starring the kid, voiceover by Rux. This game, kind of similar in terms of just, like, the camera angle and the basic look of it. Like, difference being this one takes place, like, super far in the future.
Right.
And you're playing as Red, a singer who has had her voice stolen by the Camerata, which is a group of either mafia or criminals or a cult.
They're bad people.
They are no good, very bad people. And she finds a sword called the Transistor, which kind of looks like a giant USB device.
It does, yeah.
Except it's like a circuit board USB kind of thing. But she is sent to on an adventure to try to destroy the...
It's really a revenge
thing. What's the name of the robot?
The process.
Yeah, and she wants to take out the Camerata, and the sword talks.
I feel like you're saying that the way Jenna says
Camerata.
Camerata.
I'll say it how the character says it. Camerata. Mm. There you go. There's how Transistor says it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go around, you collect different functions, which are just sort of skills or abilities.
Yeah, the game has a lot of very confusing systems.
Oh, man, we should bring back that article you did about games that have, like, way too many slang terms.
Oh, you know, that. I never posted that. It's still living.
You didn't?
No. So I've been waiting for more entries, so here we go.
There you go.
Yeah, no, John, I agreed with your pretty much everything you said in the review has been my experience with the game so far. It's I want to like it more than I'm liking. I feel like there's just something not clicking with me, and I feel like, am I missing this?
I think what it is that the... So, Bastion, it's actually, I guess the term that we'll use is set-piece moments. That doesn't have to mean a building collapsing as right. It does in shooters. But so when you played Bastion, there's a level where you're on like a moving train car, and it's a super sweet level, and everybody remembers it who played it. Or there's a level where you find the woman singing, and the entire time you're going through it, you hear singing, and it's the first time you hear a voice that's not Rux. And when you find another character, it's huge. And then there's a part where you're carrying an injured person through a level, and it's really memorable. I can't remember any single place in Transistor being that memorable. I mean, I remember parts, but I don't remember anything like, wow. Like, there was no levels that after a level I was like, wow, that was super good. The entire game is consistently good, but there's no standout moments. That's made up for in a big way by the combat, though.
Yeah, the combat's amazing.
So somebody actually compared it to Resonance of Fate, if you played that. That's a good comparison.
I have played Resonance of Fate.
That is a great comparison. So, I forgot all about that game.
I probably would have mentioned it in the review. But the way the combat works is... You can run around and just attack like normal with your different functions, but the big thing is turn. And what turn does is it freezes time, sort of like VATS from Fallout in a way, where you have a certain amount of...
Actions you can take,
and that involves running around, walking behind an enemy and attacking them, walking behind another enemy and attacking them. But because pretty much all of the abilities are movement-based, you get to do really cool things. And because there are, I think, 14 skills, and every skill can either be used right just as like an attack, or you can take that skill and make it a passive that just affects your character in general, or an upgrade to an attack. So theoretically, if you have a move called Bounce, if you use it as an attack, it shoots out an orb that bounces a few times and hits enemies. If you put that ability on your super high damage projectile move that does more damage the further away an enemy is, it then causes that to bounce. Or if you put it as a passive ability for your character, it may give you an ability where any time an enemy hits you, it has a chance of that damage bouncing to another enemy. Mm-hmm. So every one of these 14 abilities has three different functions, and that's really cool. And the actual act of, like, I would take my main thing was I would take the bounce ability and equip Get, which was it just pulls enemies towards you. So I would shoot it. I would pause the game, line up like, all right, I'm going to shoot, and it would tell you like it's going to bounce to these three guys, and then I would know that it's going to pull them towards me, and then I would like queue up like three area of effect attacks, and then watch it all play out quickly. Hmm. So it works really, really well.
Yeah. And it not only that, but it lets you like create your own playstyle to such a great effect. Like you mentioned, there are those 14 skills. Each of those 14 skills are three skills unto themselves.
Yeah, and some of them have really cool, like, some of them are just like, oh, it's a, if you equip this to a melee ability, it just increases the damage. But that's still a decision you get to make. And each ability has a number of, an amount of memory associated with it, because, mm-hmm. like I said, the transistor is basically a USB drive where you only have, let's say, 15 memory. So you may need to decide, do I want to put the ability that charms enemies on my sword, or do I want to just not use it at all and instead put on this like ridiculous thing that knocks enemies into the air as a new attack and then take my normal attack and make it the passive for that? It's really, really robust. And once you kind of, it takes maybe like an hour until it clicks about exactly how it works, but once it does, it is super satisfying.
Yeah, and I'd say really that's like the game's greatest draw. Like, I'm a little disappointed while I'm playing that I'm not feeling more invested and interested in its world. I want to know what's going on, and I want to like what's going on.
And it's not like, oh, well, it's not Bastion. It's more just that Bastion did a good job of making you care about this world and want to know about its history. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I still cared about the world, and I wanted to know about the history, and it just doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah.
They tell you things really cryptically, and I have theories about what might have happened, and none of, like, it's not like, oh, I'm not sure, I'm confused, so I don't like it. If any of my theories were right, and I assume one of them is, then it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing super special about it, and that's kind of a letdown, because
because it has the promise of, like, because when you and I were talking, we were like, oh, man, I bet, before either of us had gotten very far in, we're like, oh, I bet there's some really cool shit that happens.
Yeah, like, right away, I'm like, hey, do you think it takes place in a computer? Like, this isn't a spoiler. They never say whether or not it does or not. I'm just like, do you think it takes place in your computer? You're like, probably. That'd be really cool. Maybe something cool will happen. And the only reason we thought that is because all of the skills you get are all like everything's like I said, it's a function, it's a process. It's like those are computer terms. Maybe it takes place in a computer, and then at the end I'm like, it might. I could honestly just tell you the end right now and you'd be like, oh, okay. Like, it's not going to stop you from playing. It's not going to want to make you play more. And the fact that there's no spoiling anything from the game is kind of a letdown because I want – and there doesn't have to have been a plot twist or anything. There just wasn't enough progression for me to really want to care about anything in the game. And it looked beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And the soundtrack obviously is killer.
Yeah. So all that said, it's a great game. It really is. Yeah, it feels like it's just missing that one thing.
It's missing a moment or a few moments to make it more than just a really fun game.
Yeah.
But super worth playing. And it's
what'd you score it?
I scored it a 4 out of 5. Mm-hmm. But yeah, super fun, worth playing. Just wish there was something more to it.
Yeah. And I reviewed Wolfenstein the New Order.
I was going to play music, but I realized there's probably nothing to...
Oh, yeah,
Wolfenstein New Order soundtrack. Let's see what happens. Let's see.
The soundtrack here, not quite as memorable as Transistor.
Oh, wait. Remember this sound this from the soundtrack?
Not really.
Random German version of House of the Rising Sun?
Oh, yes.
I'm super into this. Never mind. I take back everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of alternate history stuff in that game, right?
Yeah, so...
Ripped off from Bioshock Infinite, obviously. No,
the premise of Wolfenstein the Ori, you're B.J. Blaskovich.
You said it right. Don't look around.
Yeah, that's how they say it in the game.
Blaskovich.
So that's how I said it here.
That's how the Germans.
And you... so this is actually takes place in the 60s, right? The opening level is... kind of builds up to what happens, but you basically wake up from like a coma or something.
Yeah, also that opening level being a World War II level, holy shit, do we need some next gen, sorry, new gen World War II shooters. I would fucking love a new gen World War II shooter. We had a whole generation without World War II. Let's bring it back. That was a cool war.
Yeah. But you're in the 60s, the Nazis won World War II because they have access to a
technology.
Super fancy technology, yes.
And that technology lets them do the things they were already doing in the other games,
right,
which is
like
make robots.
Build mechs and robot dogs.
Yes.
And
varying sizes of robot dogs.
Yes, there are the regular ones, then there are the really big ones.
The really big ones don't even have dogs in them, do they?
No, they're just robots.
There's no really shaped no need like for dogs. Them to have made them shaped. Like, you could have made, like, give them a fin like a shark or something.
Well, they already have the design for the dog parts. They just made them bigger.
Hey, that, can you just make, that collar you have, can you just make it like 5 times the size? Yeah.
But, you know, Wolfenstein the New Order, I think right away makes itself known as to what kind of shooter it is. You're dual-wielding assault rifles within 5 minutes of the game.
Sliding on the ground.
Yeah, sliding while shooting Nazis in half. Like, it's, you know, it loves gore. It's a very gory game. And I think I wrote in the review, like, it's a shooter that revels in the act of shooting. Like, it's all about just the physicality of firing guns at enemies and blowing them up. Mm-hmm. And it lets you do that a lot. And I think there's a lot of really great systems at play here that enhance that and make it more fun. For instance, the level design for starters is really good in that it's usually open arena-like areas that do a great job of giving you some room to breathe, to run around, duck behind cover. And then a lot of times you're fighting tons of enemies at once, and so there's a really cool cover system where you're just holding a button and that lets you peek up or left or right or down. It gives you a lot of freedom without snapping you to anything. So it removes pretty much all of the frustrations that are typically associated with first-person shooters that use a cover system. And then there's a really cool perk system too, which was like, so you know there's been this obsession with experience points in shooters. Well, Wolfenstein gets rid of experience points, and instead you get really neat passive upgrades just by doing cool shit like kill 30 Nazis with an assault rifle and now cool you can carry more assault rifle ammo, or kill 2 enemies at once with a grenade and now you can carry extra grenades, and there's all sorts of different passive upgrades aside from just like increases to ammo capacity. But it's really fun, and one thing I really really enjoyed way more than I thought it was than I thought I would were the characters in the game, actually. BJ himself has lots of really interesting internal monologues where he's like delivering very dramatic lines like, it was a Sunday afternoon and I was dreaming of having a family. Or, like, he's got lots of really cool things that he says, and the voice work is really good, and he delivers them in such a way where it's like, wow, this is it. You know what it actually reminded me of? John, you can tell me if I'm completely off base here, because I don't normally get into Tarantino stuff, but it did have that vibe to me.
It does. And it has it in a way, Ben Kuchera at Polygon wrote an interesting article about how the game was very sex positive. Is that the term?
Yeah. He used?
In that it does, like, there's sex in the game.
But it's cash, not weird.
It's not weird, and which is strange that Wolfenstein would be the game, but there's just scenes where the characters are having sex because they're like, well, this sucks. We need some happiness in our life. And it's not like a weird, like, glorification of sex. Like, look at these sweet angles. It's just like some characters are like, they basically treat sex the same way they treat killing Nazis, which is like, yo, you want to go have sex? And they're like, yeah, we should just go have sex.
They don't, like, film it like a porno or something.
No,
they
not
don't
at all. No. And one thing I was talking, when I was describing the scene to Henry, I was telling him, you know, it really reminded me, one of the very first sex scenes that happens. I was like, it really reminded me of that scene from the movie Enemy at the Gates where the sniper dude and that woman hook up in the bunker. Like,
Jude
they
Law,
don't
Rachel Weisz,
they don't know that she's a woman, right? Like, she cuts her
hair.
Well,
she sneaks in to look like a dude. And then they just, like, get under a blanket together and then just have, like, awkward, like, you'll probably die tomorrow kind of sex.
Yeah, and it's like, so there are scenes like that, and it's just like, it was surprising, like, the way this game handled story. I didn't expect anything from this game in terms of story or character development, and yet it did a much better job of delivering those things than a lot of the shooters that I've played in recent memory. And so it's just like there's this really interesting, like, compelling package of things that you don't expect plus things that you do expect that are delivered very well. I'd say a couple things that really frustrated me. Sometimes you're facing just way too many of the big enemies.
I'm at a part right now in the game where you just walk into a hallway and it's just like there's a really big robot and two small robots and like 20 guys. And I killed all of them at this point without a problem. And it's like, all right. Like, four more waves of that, and you'll be good.
And it's just like, you know, a lot of minor frustrations like that. And one thing that was really annoying was people on the YouTube video for the video review were like, we love challenge, so we're glad it's like that. And it's like, this was before they played the game, and I was just like, yeah, but I'm not talking about challenge. I'm talking about, like, just fucking annoying too many dudes.
You get bored because it's like, there's nothing there. I've looted everything in this room three times. Yeah. There are no enemy. Like, I've killed 150 enemies. It's more just when you have a game that's that. It's not that it's difficult. It's that it gets monotonous and just repetitive, really short. Mm. You end up just getting bored of the location.
Yeah. Well, and there were segments I had to replay like six times before I could get through it. It's just like, oh, come on. It's just super annoying. But, you know, it doesn't do too much of that, and it's definitely a super, super fun game to
play. The tone is definitely weird, though.
It is, yeah. It kind of switches. Like, I mentioned those internal monologues where those are all very serious, and then 2 seconds later it'll transition to there's, like, heavy rock music in the background and sweet, sweet guitar solos wailing while they're, like, doing cool action-y things.
Hey, BJ. Like, hey, BJ, you ready to go kill some Nazis?
And then there's, like, at
least, yeah, I'm going to kill so many Nazis.
Yeah, there's at least three scenes in which that exact thing happens where a character's like, dude, let's kill a bunch of Nazis, and BJ's like, yeah,
there's one
high five.
You told me about it and I didn't fully believe you, but there's a scene where some guy's sitting on the couch and the guy just goes like, hey, BJ, you ready to kill some Nazi? And BJ goes like, oh, yeah. And then they high five and, like, sweet metal starts playing.
Yeah. And it's like, what the shit? You know, and, like, 2 minutes before that, BJ is, like, delivering a very heavy introspective
Or you'll,
dialogue,
like, he'll wake up in the middle of the night and there's, like, a super autistic character that lives in the area just, like, giving, like, a dialogue about how her life has been miserable. And then he just, like, wakes up and it's like, Nazi killing.
Yeah. So it's, like, it was weird because sometimes it felt like it couldn't decide if it
feels
wanted
to be. Like, it feels like the characters are from different games sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think most of the time, not all the time, but at least a good chunk of the time, I felt like that sudden shift kind of worked in that it, in a very Tarantino way, like I had mentioned, like, it, all right, I get that. That's cool. But yeah, sometimes it's just like, this is fucking weird, like the way that it would shift that so suddenly. But yeah, great game. Definitely recommend it. No multiplayer, doesn't need it though.
What did you score it?
I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Mm. So as good as Transistor.
Well, of course,
equal to Transistor. If they're both 4 out of 5s, and they're the exact same quality.
They're identical.
It's as good as Halo Reach.
That's right.
There we go. Lots of other reviews coming, hitting Games Radar in the near future. That's not true. Like two more, and then like a big break.
But
there'll be a lot more features from Ryan Talgenic in the meantime.
Yeah.
Just kidding. E3's in the middle of that. We'll be too busy with that. Quick break, and then when we come back, jump into the community segment. Welcome back to the third and final segment of Radio Radar, episode 90. Before we jump into the community segment proper, we do have something to discuss.
screwed up.
Henry, just go ahead and read your shame at the bottom of this page.
All right.
It's lengthy, Henry. But you can skip around.
From Shocksta, is that the one?
Yep. Yes.
For Henry, the future Mario NFC figurines were never meant to justify the gamepad. It was stated to justify the NFC reader on the gamepad after Pokemon Rumble U failed to do so, and even then Iwata said in both financial meetings this year, January and April, that they want to justify the gamepad with more gamepad heavy games. I find that as a miss on your part when you assume Nintendo thinks the only thing we need for the gamepad are the toys. Here's the quote itself regarding E3. Also, at the time, we will introduce multiple games that are designed to introduce players to the value of the Wii U gamepad by demonstrating playstyles only possible because of it. These titles have been developed by internal teams under the guidance of Mr. Miyamoto. The software titles that we will show at E3, which make use of the gamepad, will range from near-complete titles to titles that are in early development, but will demonstrate the title's core appeals. Get it right, Henry. You're the Nintendo expert here.
Boo, Henry.
Henry.
Maybe
boo.
Next.
All right. I will admit, I did not read. I didn't see that quote before. So now I know. That will help me with writing a Nintendo predictions article next week. So thanks. In a way, you helped me out. Shocksta.
All right. So let's move on to the question of the week answers from last week. The question that Tom left us with was, what movie concept or mechanic do you want to see added to games? Easy Peasy Lemon Squeeze said, I want games to make me cry more like I do in every single Tom Hanks film.
Universal Tofu says, Memento. You could have levels play out in reverse order while also incorporating some way to make the character forget what the player won't. You could use tattoo shops as save points. Take pictures of people to keep track of them. Most importantly of all, though, never answer the phone.
Let's see here. We got Cinesaur said, the mechanic I'd like to see games take from movies is the price. Hell yes, I'd like to pay $10 to $14 for my new Blockbuster games. I mean, the story mode lasts as long as a Peter Jackson movie anyway, right?
Lurkero. Says, I think most movie mechanics have made their way into video games quite often, so I don't know how much there is to add. There are a couple of mechanics that are infrequent, and those are the constant case movies. What? And the disjointed narrative movies. Disjointed narrative would be something like Pulp Fiction, where events are told from different perspectives, and they uniquely join up at some point, and the consistent chase mechanic would be good for a Mirror's Edge reboot.
I think consistent chase is...
What, you mean like in like 24, like a Bourne film?
Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
Just to do let me Google it. Well, I guess like Mission Impossible 4, they're chasing somebody throughout the whole thing.
I actually have no idea, and Googling didn't help me. Anyway, moving on to BKO. 80s style music montage. Imagine how much more fun role-playing games would be if instead of having to endure 15 hours of miserable level grinding, you could do it in 3 minutes with a wild music montage. Where's Titus and Yuna? Or there's Titus and Yuna throwing summoned monsters at each other. They're so wacky. Waka's doing what on a chocobo? Oh, Orin, you make all the craziest faces. That's right, Kimari. You can hit that jump shot after all. All it took was the practice, inspired by the stylings of Mark Vija's Way to Go. Now go and on and take Sin before he wins the Tri Games and gets the Lambda Lambda Lambdas kicked off campus. And winner this week, I believe, is BKO. I think music montages would make games better.
Of course.
Yeah, so, I love that one.
So be sure to shoot an email to RadioRadar@GamesRadar.com talking about what consoles you have and what games you like, and we might send you something. We have a special prize for the winners of this upcoming Question of the Week, though. We have 4 codes for Battle Block Theater.
Whoa.
I don't know what console they're on. I'm going to guess Steam?
I think they were PC.
Sticking with Steam then?
Yeah.
And to get it, the question of the week is, what's your favorite, or what is or what was your favorite Flash/browser-based game that you've ever played?
Mm.
I'm going to go with a relatively recent one in Superhot, which has recently been kickstarted as well to be a full-fledged game. But it's a game where you have it's a first-person shooter where all the enemies are just sort of red silhouettes, but time only moves when you move, and that includes bullets flying at you.
That's really cool.
I'm going to go with kind of a cop-out, which is Meat Boy, the original version of the Super Meat Boy that was on Newgrounds. I haven't played really any Flash games since Newgrounds in like 2000 or so. but Meat Boy was a fun one. Just it was like the single screen kind of platforming style of Meat Boy that they would make so famous in Super Meat Boy, and the same style of joking around too.
I'm kind of like Henry. I haven't played a Flash game in a really long time, but I did play a lot of some Flash tower defense games. I don't recall any of their names specifically, but I did play a lot of them. They were very fun. So there.
Do you remember any of them, like, gameplay-wise? Or?
Yeah, well, there's this one where you're, like, in a castle, and you can upgrade its turrets to shoot different ammunition. And I remember it being pretty gory. Like, you were fighting stick men who were running toward your castle.
Was it Crush the Castle?
It might have been. I'd probably have to look at it to remember. But, yeah, it was really cool.
Was it this one?
Yeah, that's the one.
That was actually, it got turned into, it was Defend Your Castle, and it got turned into a WiiWare launch title.
Well, it must have been very successful.
Oh, wildly.
I haven't played a Flash game in such a long time, but I was doing research for my Zelda Clones article, and I found one that was a browser-based game, and I totally forget the name of it, but it was like a Zelda game, but the game was glitched, and you're this hero that was supposed to keep the game from glitching, so you'd run around and fight these big cubes that were just glitched-out graphics, and it started off as like the original Zelda, like the levels looked exactly the same, but then you'd fall into a trap door and then it'd turn into some like weird isometric like other type of game, and it was just like weird, and these big glitch blocks would come at you like trains, and one part you're running through the desert like you would in Ocarina of Time, like the Gerudo desert, and it was crazy. It's a pretty awesome Zelda clone, but I totally forget the name of it. It's like something quest. Starts with an S.
Shit quest.
Shit quest.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, go Google search.
Shim quest.
Something.
Shim-shin.
So yeah, let us know in the comments what your favorite Flash/browser game is/was. And we're going to give four of yous what we're guessing is PC Steam codes for Battleblock Theater. The developers came in earlier this week to do a live stream of the game. Be sure to watch our live streams too every Wednesday at 3:30 to 5:00.
Yep. Pacific time.
Pacific. Like us on Facebook, review us on iTunes, comment on Games Radar, click on everything on Games Radar,
send us multiple times.
Emails at radioradar@gamesradar.com if you have any suggestions or questions you want us to answer, and we'll talk to you next week.